I feel we must begin. It's September 30th, 2023, and it's 1921 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today, and we're looking at our Born and Raised article, Chapter 7, Paragraph 11. But I also want to look at Chapter 12 of the Crucible article today, or at least refer you to that, which is an exceptionally decisive chapter in the Crucible article. And it wasn't written until the end of that article. I didn't plan how well that worked in the Crucible article at all. It was very decisive because it comes out in line with all of the secular history that one could hope for in order to establish the true chronology of the Bible during the time of the Judges. And that's such a grossly misunderstood time period. So it's the chapter 12 of the Crucible article. If we have time, we'll get to it. For now, Born and Raised, chapter 7, paragraph 11. Temporary gratification fails to give us greatest joy. Paul was one who was willing to suffer much in his own ministry because he got much pleasure serving Christ. He did it to help others, not to get approval himself. Peter knew that it was better to suffer in doing good. The reference for that is 1 Peter 3 and 17. Many are the afflictions of the righteous one, and yet Jehovah delivers him or her out of all of these pains. Jesus said to his followers that they would experience tribulation in the world, but that he had overcome it, the world that is, and his tribulation, but he overcame the world. He conquered the world, in one translation. As for Jehovah, he created the heavens. As dignity and splendor are before him, so strength and joy are his. The reference there is 1 Chronicles 16:27, or 26 and 27, I should say. That's the end of our study in the Born and Raised article for today. We barely scratched the surface of our time here, but our proverb, little ones, for today is Proverbs chapter 6, verse 29. Let's say, as for anyone having relations with the wife of his fellow man, or likewise comparing it to a man walking on hot coals, and, you know, having his feet not be scorched, which seems unlikely. So also, it is with anyone having relations with the wife of his fellow man, no one touching her will remain unpunishable. So having relations with the wife of one's fellow man is a very serious offense for which punishment will always be given. There will always be a punishment, and a person will not remain unpunishable who does that. This is the severity, the seriousness of adultery, which is another word to describe that act of having relations with the wife of one's fellow man. That's something children are doing well to learn, that when they're quite young, as young as possible. If they could possibly take that into their hearts and learn it, it would be very advantageous for them. So the next section of our reading is from Joshua chapter 18 for today. This is fascinating because we just read, is it really Joshua? Yeah, Manasseh we had. So we're going to look at, I think the tribe of Benjamin. Yeah, the tribe of Benjamin is in this chapter, the lot The dividing up of the land still is going on. But here we see Shiloh, finally. This is the first mention of Shiloh as the place where the tent of meeting was to be set up so that they would do their religious ceremonies in Shiloh. Joshua 18. Then all the assembly of the sons of Israel were congregated at Shiloh, and they proceeded to locate the tent of meeting there, as the land was now subdued before them. So we see that the conquest of the land had occurred. In large part, the land was subdued, and this was the year 1446, as we've already decided in our chronology, based on Caleb's age and how old he was when they spied out the land in 1491 BCE. And 45 years later? Right, 45 years later. 1446 is the year in the BCE years when this time period is dated. But there were still left among the sons of Israel those whose inheritance they had not apportioned out, namely 7 tribes. So Joshua said to the sons of Israel, "How long are you going to be delinquent about going in to take possession of the land that Jehovah, the God of your forefathers, has given you? Furnish for yourselves 3 men of each tribe, and let me send them out, that they may get up and walk about in the land and map it out in accord with their inheritance, and let them come to me, and they must apportion it among themselves into 7 shares. Judah will keep standing on his territory to the south, and the house of Joseph will keep standing on their territory to the north. As for you people, you will map out the land into 7 shares, and you must bring them here to me, and I must cast lots here for you before Jehovah our God. For the Levites have no share in among you, because the priesthood of Jehovah is their inheritance, and Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh have taken their inheritance on the side of the Jordan toward the east, which Moses, the servant of Jehovah, has given them. The Levites had no share, because the priesthood of Jehovah was their inheritance. So the men got up that they might go, and Joshua proceeded to command those who were going to map out the land, saying, "Go and walk about in the land and map it out and return to me. And here is where I shall draw lots for you before Jehovah in Shiloh." With that, the men went and passed through the land and mapped it out by cities in 7 shares in a book. After that, they came to Joshua at the camp in Shiloh. And Joshua went drawing lots for them in Shiloh before Jehovah. Thus Joshua there apportioned the land to the sons of Israel in their shares. Then the lot came up of the tribe of the sons of Benjamin by their families, and the territory of their lot went out between the sons of Judah and the sons of Joseph. So it will be north of Judah, south of Joseph, and their boundary came to be at the northern corner from the Jordan, and the boundary went up to the slope of Jericho on the north, and went up on the mountain westward, and its termination proved to be at the wilderness of Bethaven, and the boundary passed over from there to Luz, at the southern slope of Luz, that is to say Bethel, and the boundary went down to Ataroth Adar, upon the mountain that is on the south of lower Bethhoron. And the boundary was marked out and went around at the western side to the south from the mountain that faces Beth-Horon to the south, and its termination proved to be at Kiriath Baal, that is to say Kiriath Jearim, a city of the sons of Judah. This is the western side, and the side to the south was from the extremity of Kiriath Jearim, and the boundary went out westward and went out to the spring of the waters of Nephtoah. And the boundary went down to the extremity of the mountain that faces the valley of the son of Hinnom, which is in the low plain of Rephaim to the north, and it went down to the valley of Hinnom, to the slope of the Jebusite on the south, and went down to Enrogel, and it was marked out northward and went out to En-Shemesh and went out to Galilath, which is in front of the ascent of Adummim. And it went down to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. And it passed over to the northern slope in front of the Arabah and went down to the Arabah. And the boundary passed over to the northern slope of Beth Hogla, and the termination of it, the border, proved to be at the northern bay of the Salt Sea at the southern end of the Jordan. This was the southern boundary, and the Jordan served as its boundary on the eastern side. This was the inheritance of the sons of Benjamin by their families, by its boundaries all around. And the cities of the tribe of the sons of Benjamin by their families proved to be Jericho and Beth Hogla, and Emek Kizis, and Beth Arabah, and Zemarayim, and Bethel, and Avim, and Pera, and Ophrah, and Kephar Ammoni, Kephar Ammoni, and Ophni, and Geba, 12 cities and their settlements. Gibeon and Ramah and Beeroth and Mizpeh and Kephira and Moza and Rechem and Irpiel and Tarala and Zela, Ha'ilef and Jebusi, that is to say Jerusalem, Gibeah and Kiriath, 14 cities and their settlements. This was the inheritance of the sons of Benjamin by their families. So the borders are given, and also the cities contained within the land that was allotted to the tribe of Benjamin. The cities are named, which helps to identify what the location was of this allotment. So there's a lot of information given in these records, and this account of the book of Joshua is a great source for archaeological investigators, you know, who are studying the cities of ancient Israel around this time period. They're very interested in seeing everything that they can learn from the Bible. All these cities, the names of these cities would be, you know, would be very important in helping them to learn more about, but they'd be looking for these cities, and they'd be in their diggings, they would be trying to find these cities. And well, maybe some of them, many of them may still exist today, of course. But many of them don't exist today, probably, too. So what a wonderful source of information the book of Joshua must be for these archaeologists. What about our reading from Romans for today? Oh, this is a very important part of Romans, a chapter of Romans. We've been reading all about what Paul said about how important the Jewish faith was to Christianity and to Christians, even though many of the Jews didn't accept Christianity. And he talks about how there may still be hope for the Jews to believe in Christ. But then in chapter 12, he starts talking about something else. He says, "Consequently, I entreat you by the compassions of God, brothers, to present your bodies a sacrifice, living, holy, acceptable to God, a sacred service with your power of reason, and quit being fashioned after this system of things, but be transformed by making your mind over, that you may prove to yourselves the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." prove to yourselves the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For through the undeserved kindness given to me, I tell everyone there among you not to think more of himself than it is necessary to think, but to think so as to have a sound mind. Each one as God has distributed to him a measure of faith. For just as we have in one body many members, but the members do not all have the same function, so we, although many, are one body in union with Christ, but members belonging individually to one another. Since then we have gifts differing according to the undeserved kindness given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy, according to the faith proportioned to us, or a ministry, let us be at this ministry, or he that teaches, let him be at his teaching, or he that exhorts, let him be at his exhortation. He that distributes, let him do it with liberality. He that presides, let him do it in real earnest. He that shows mercy, let him do it with cheerfulness. Let your love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is wicked. Cling to what is good. In brotherly love, have tender affection for one another. In showing honor to one another, take the lead. Do not loiter at your business. Be aglow with the Spirit. Slave for Jehovah. Rejoice in the hope. Endure under tribulation. Persevere in prayer. Share with the holy ones according to their needs. Follow the course of hospitality. Keep on blessing those who persecute. Be blessing and do not be cursing. Rejoice with people who rejoice. Weep with people who weep. Be minded the same way toward others as to yourselves. Do not be minding lofty things, but be led along with the lowly things. Do not become discreet in your own eyes. Return evil for evil to no one. Provide fine things in the sight of all men. If possible, as far as it depends upon you, be peaceable with all men. Do not avenge yourselves, beloved, but yield place to the wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says Jehovah. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap fiery coals upon his head. Do not let yourself be conquered by the evil, but keep conquering the evil with the good. That's the end of Romans 12. Do not let yourself be conquered by the evil, but keep conquering the evil with the good. If your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. Right. Very interesting words Paul has to say there in chapter 12. And of course, that's a direct quote. If your enemy's hungry, that's a quote from Proverbs. If the one hating you is hungry, Proverbs 25 and 21, give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. So it's a quotation from the Hebrew scriptures in the book of Proverbs, which many of the scriptures are in the New Testament, or in the letters of Paul. Paul quotes very often from the former covenant and the earlier scriptures, you know, the law and the prophets, I guess we could call it, the Hebrew scriptures is one name for it. But of course, we have also the Greek Septuagint version of it, which is translated into Greek. So if we call it the Hebrew scriptures, we're not excluding the Greek Septuagint from that. But these are the quotations that we see time and time again in the Christian scriptures, I guess we could call them. The Christian scriptures, and we have they could be called the Hebrew scriptures because they were for the Hebrews. We could also call them the Jewish scriptures, I guess. The Old Testament could be called the Jewish scriptures, and the New Testament could be called the Christian scriptures. Perhaps that's the best way of describing them. Because whether they were written in Greek or translated into Greek, they were still the Jewish scriptures and used by the Jews. at the time when Greek became the common language, during the time of Alexander the Great, from about 300 BCE or so, when Alexander began to go on his conquest of the world. But when Greek became the predominant language, then the Greek Septuagint became also very popular among the Christian disciples in their time. So they quoted from the Septuagint and not from the original Hebrew. Typically, they quoted from the Septuagint. So Septuagint is a very important part of the Jewish scriptures. That Greek translation called the Septuagint. But Paul quotes very liberally from those Jewish scriptures that are equally inspired by God, as also the Christian scriptures are too, if not even more so, because they tell about the Messiah, Jesus. Vengeance is mine, he says, verse 19. I will repay, says Jehovah. That's a quote from Deuteronomy 32 and 35. Vengeance is mine and retribution. Right. Okay, so this chapter of Romans 12 is one that can enable people to break free of drugs, because it says, in strongly encouraging that, to present your bodies a sacrifice, living, holy, acceptable to God, a sacred service with your power of reason. And you see, somebody who resorts to, you know, taking a substance, whether it's, you know, cigarettes or alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, or vaping, whatever it might be, whatever they're doing, they're no longer using their power of reason anymore, right? They're choosing to resort to something other than reason, which is a substance, right? It's not reason. Substance is a thing, it's a physical substance. It's not using their power of reason to overcome their difficulties, right? They're resorting to a substance to help them instead of their power of reason. So, now that's not to say that this is easy to do. It's just an encouragement to use the power of reason and also quit being fashioned, in verse 2, after this system of things. In other words, don't follow the trends. So if somebody's saying, this is the new drug of choice for today, or whatever it might be, this says, well, don't be following the trend. Quite clearly it says, and it mentions there being transformed, verse 2, by making your mind over. So you can make your mind over and break free of drugs or substances of any kind. Even food can be a substance that's abused, right? That you may prove to yourselves, it says, right, in making our minds over, we may prove to ourselves the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The perfect will of God. So that's strong encouragement for us to try to be better. Now, nobody expects that being perfect is going to be easy at all, but this is a very strong scripture, a strong encouragement by Paul, given by Paul, but it's one of the most powerful portions of all scripture for helping us to understand how important it is to attempt to be like Jehovah, holy and perfect, to try to be perfect in the way we treat our bodies. Okay, that's what it's talking about there. It's Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. But also he goes on in verse 3, not to think more of ourselves than it is necessary to think. That can get us out of trouble too. If we don't think more of ourselves than is necessary, then we may not have to argue with somebody. And we may not have to get involved with bad people who will lead us into bad dealings and bad actions, such as substance abuse, for example, if we're not seeing that we need to impress our way upon them. If we don't think we need to make a big issue out of anything, we can just carry on thinking about ourselves as, you know, no more than we need to. In our own minds, we don't have to think of ourselves as being important, but we can focus on trying to be good in the way that we only need to worry about ourselves. In other words, we don't have to worry about that we're important, and therefore we have to impress ourselves upon others. You know, well, and we can be different. In verse 4, we don't have to be the same as everyone else. Just because other people are using drugs, that doesn't mean we have to. We can still be part of one organization, but we wouldn't join an organization according to the scriptures. We wouldn't join an organization where drug abuse was practiced. But the idea here that we have different people in the congregation, helps us understand that in the world too we're going to be different from other people. They're going to be people who have problems with, you know, coping with whatever problems they have, and they may resort to substance abuse, but that doesn't mean we have to be the same, because even in the congregation where we have people who are attempting to follow this very closely, to trying to be avoiding substance abuse, even in the congregation there are differences between people. We're not all the same. So in the world, of course, we're going to be different as well. In the world, you know, as a whole, there are going to be people who are of all sorts and types of people. They're not going to all be one type. Not everybody's going to be an alcoholic, nor is everybody going to be, you know, interested in health or whatever. I mean, it's going to be different for everybody. And probably, maybe there's even more difference in the world than there is in the congregation, because in the world they don't have the Bible to help them, to guide them. You know, they don't have the desire or the opportunity. Perhaps they've never been given the opportunity to be exposed to the teachings in the Bible, and so they have less or fewer rules to follow, or guidelines, fewer guidelines to keep them away from certain dangerous or bad things, such as substance abuse, which is only one bad thing, of course. There are many bad things. We mentioned adultery too. So sexual immorality is another thing. But in the congregation, Paul's talking about gifts that are differing in verse 6. We can be different. Some of us prophesy if we have that gift. Some of us have a ministry. Nowadays we don't think of prophecy so much. But even if we quote from the Bible, that's prophecy. But we don't think about prophecy in the way that the prophets of the Jewish scriptures prophesied. They became, you know, a part of the Bible canon. The prophets, Ezekiel, you know, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Daniel, all of these prophets of the Jewish scriptures, some of whom we may be well familiar with. So there are many different gifts in the congregation. And so, you know, when we come into the congregation, we don't have to fit in by being the same as everybody else, is what that's saying too. But this is such an information-rich chapter here. Romans chapter 12. It talks about tender affection in verse 10. So many different things are mentioned here. It's full of information and full of beneficial principles. It's so powerful and so different from the rest of Romans, too. But we're going to be going on to Romans 13 also, which is, again, another different topic entirely. Hopefully we'll do that tomorrow. So that's the end of our Bible study for today. Well, you know what, though? We've only got a couple of minutes. Yeah, so I wanted to talk about... we don't have time now. But it's okay. Chapter 12 of the Crucible article. It's called Judges, hyphen, in the mere hollow of his hand. And it's a lot to cover. I would love to cover it in more detail, and I think, and I hope we will soon. But the coordination and the exact alignment with what is known about secular history is so phenomenal in that chapter, and it just happened using our chronology, the genealogy, using 1452. It turned out we ended up with the 300 years of Jephthah ending in 300 years after 1452, which was 1152, 300 years later. And if the Bible hadn't mentioned the 300 years of Jephthah, we never would have gotten that alignment, that date 1152. But once we got the date 1152, we continued using that. But that was only one thing. There's only one element here. I just want to mention one because we don't have time to mention any others. But that enabled us to get the time period for when Jephthah ruled. And it was so perfectly aligned because 1152, 40 years later, is 1112. And Samuel, according to Josephus, ruled or judged for 12 years. So that brings us to Saul in 1100 BCE, and Saul ruled for 42 years, according to the reconstructed text. So we have, you know, David in 1058, which is exactly what we had, and 41 years for him. Solomon in 1017. It works out exactly in our chronology. But everything else, Gideon, the time of Gideon, and its alignment, it's his alignment with the time of Midian, and when the Egyptian pharaoh, the Merneptah-Stela, said that Israel's seed was no more, that aligns perfectly with the pharaoh's year 5, 1245 BCE, which is the second year of the oppression of Midian in our chronology, which works perfectly. So it's phenomenal. That's all for today. I love you. It's September 30th, 2023, 1954, hours, Ward Green here. This is my chronological chronograph, Crow, and Cassie saying bye for now.